Welcome to this week's episode of Guftagu, an LSE Beaver podcast series in collaboration with the Pakistan Society. Guftagu means conversation in Urdu, and this series will feature candid conversations regarding South Asian social issues, culture, and identity. This week, I will be joined by Angveen Abbas and Inaya Inam, two fellow penultimate year LSE students, as we discuss dating norms in South Asia and the experience of navigating love and relationships as a South Asian woman.
Hey Angveen, hey Inaya. So as all of us here are aware, South Asian society has very strong stigmas attached to forming romantic relationships outside of marriage, finding love, dating. And all three of us belong to Pakistan, so of course we can speak most accurately about Pakistani Muslim societies in specific. But generally, I'd say that trends do seem to, similar trends prevail all over South Asia. So to start off our discussion, let's first speak about, as a young Muslim Pakistani girl in her 20s, what importance does finding love and dating hold in your life? And more generally, what role do you think finding love and dating holds in young people's lives that South Asian society generally just so brutally misses and is unable to understand? Angveen, would you want to start?
I think in my personal life, of course, I've always viewed these experiences as a way of growing and a way of understanding yourself as well as other people. I think we forget how much these experiences can teach us about what we care about, what we prioritize, the sort of life we want for ourselves, as well as what it truly means to care for other people, to nurture other people, to love other people. And I think these experiences can be really formative and are, you know, beyond just having fun, beyond the cute parts of dating someone. It's just, they're important to have because they help you grow as a person.
I totally agree with that and more, you know, dating, finding love, getting married, you know, it's very still universal. It's very much the plan, the life plan that most people do implicitly, even if they may not know it, but they do have it planned out in their minds. You know, we're surrounded by women who are married, we're surrounded by men who, you know, married in their 20s. It's, you know, you see it on movies all the time. And it's inescapable in that sense. There also, I think, I mean, I don't know, we can talk about this later, but I do feel like there is a time limit as well. I think that society and, you know, culture does impose that you are meant to find your love and find the one and get married before a certain age limit because they may slip out, they may be taken by another. And there is that, I think, subtle tacit pressure that perhaps sits on all the minds of young women.
Yeah, I completely agree, actually. I think being at university right now, there's a sort of, it's just a sort of ticking clock. It's a ticking time bomb. It's like, all right, I have this many years until my parents are going to be like, well, have you thought about getting married yet? It's like, okay, once I graduate, it's very much going to be like, okay, now what? What's the natural step here? And, you know, for me, getting married that young is definitely not a plan, definitely not a priority. And I have parents who, you know, would never force a decision on me like that. But it's still, it's just one of those things that's unsaid.
No, absolutely. I mean, I don't know, Angveen, Vinia, if you can, you know, speak about this, but I've heard of jokes where girls, they joke about it, but like you said, there's a very subtle truth to it where they joke and they say, you know, maybe I'll just do a master's so then I can avoid the conversation with my parents about getting married, because then I've got something to that's occupying me for a year and a year and a half that I can say I'm busy with, I can't talk about marriage with you, I'm focusing on my education. It's ironic because we're 21st century women. We're privileged. We're brought up by, you know, I'm very privileged. I had a feminist mother, you know, to be financially independent and to earn for yourself and to be self-reliant. But there is continuing, you know, even that my mother inhabits. funny, and it can be funny and it can be harmless in some ways on the parts of our parents, but it also is, you know, I can imagine for people who aren't as lucky as us, with parents who don't take it in such lightheartedness as us, the pressure it can put on and the toll it can have.
It's just interesting to think about how, you know, love and intimacy for their sake are such a taboo, but if it's sanctioned by our parents, or if our wider family says yes, it's okay, that's fine. But when we sort of pursue it outside of, you know, those conventions of what is and isn't proper, it's seen as a moral failing. It's this weird paradox, in a sense, that, you know, I'll be talking to, like, the women in my family or my mom or whatever, and it'll be like, well, you can't exactly date, especially like when I was younger, you can't date, but also, can you find a man to get married to? My parents would like freak out at the mere idea of me having male friends, but also, you know, you need to get married by 25.
Yeah, the problem with the time limit is also especially pronounced in the sense that there's this idea that you have to get married. And so for a lot of women, it's also, I think, stressful. And you have to get married by a certain age. So 27, 28. And I mean, this is also very lenient as compared to like a lot of parents generally, with 25 is the norm. And it's the idea that if I'm unable to find someone by the age of 25, 26, 27, my parents are very nice. They're never going to force me. But if I'm 28, they might as well force me. And then it's especially pronounced exactly when all your life you've been told that you're not allowed to look for love, but then by the time you're 24, 25, all of a sudden you're supposed to have all this experience and have found the perfect person.
No, it's interesting to think about. Like, I think about my relationship with my mother, and like maybe 2-3 years ago, I could not imagine even so much as talking about like dating vaguely, right? But now it's like, you know, when I was home for the summer, there would like be these questions like, so who are your friends at university? Are you friends with any boys? Now that you're like 20, this is something to think about. It's such a weird feeling. It's like, acha, theek hai.
I find exact same experience. I think it's with us. I mean, I moved out for my first year, so I've moved out, and same with you. You've moved to another country. You're independent now. You're seen as a woman now. We can discuss these things with you. You know, it's a safe. But I also do find discussing it extremely strange, and I never know what the parameters are to stop. Because I'll find sometimes my mum will just sort of weirdly jerk away from it and go, this isn't appropriate to talk about. And then I'll be like, okay. So it is this weird liminal space, I call it, I would call it delusion and denial. Deluded about how, you know, realistically you go about meeting someone that you want to form a long life companionship with. And they're in denial about the fact that, you know, kids are dating, kids, this is happening, whether or not you want to admit it or not, you have to get with the program. You know, a family friend of my mother's, who's been my mother's friend for years and I'm very close to, once put it to me this way. I think I was having a fight with my mother about something, about dating, about Asian culture being backward, etc., etc. And then he said something that was so strange. But I understand it now, of course. And this is a very cosmopolitan man, very well educated. He's homosexual. He clearly, you know, has struggled with backwards Asian culture mentality towards his own way of life. And he said something so strange. He said to me, but Inaya, you shouldn't forget your Pakistani. You shouldn't forget the fact that you're Pakistani and there's a way of doing things. And that perhaps the way I was, what I thought it was normal to conduct myself in a dating atmosphere, was then thus offending my Pakistaniness, and that I need to retain that. And I remember thinking to myself, what? You know, you being Pakistani and being gay is completely, you know, in conflict, because Pakistani culture doesn't even recognize your, you know, your rights or your, you know. And he said that to me, and it took a while, but it's just, I think that's really emblematic of the delusion and the denial.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand what you're talking about here. And it just puts us in sort of an impossible position as we grow older. Like what you said about not knowing the sort of boundaries that you can and can't cross, because it's so hard to talk about them openly. And I think there's also, for me at least, there's just this sort of discomfort even when the conversation's being brought up, because, you know, we've grown up our entire teens with this being something you just cannot think of. So now it's like, wait, are you trying to find out so I can get in trouble? Are you snooping, actually having honest conversation with me?
I think they are conflicted. I think because their parents never spoke to them about anything, they feel they have to speak about everything with us. But they themselves don't know how to navigate that. I think that's especially true for my mother when she laments, you know, I'm so good with you. I talk to you about everything. My parents just, you know, they just expected me to learn about it and I got on with it. And I think it's converted to this overcompensation. But they themselves aren't equipped totally how to correct their own, you know, slightly problematic attitudes and slightly problematic notions of it all. I think that's, I don't know if that's the same for you both, but I think that's especially true for, I'm fourth generation. I think that's especially true for second generation or third generation Pakistani, now parents. I find that's a common thread amongst all of them. You know, whilst they were out being young and being teenagers and trying to date, you know, Asians of different faiths and the struggles that they had with that, and because their parents simply just didn't speak about it full stop, or they were met with severe punishment. I think now this generation, my mum's generation, the third generation or second, is really trying to sort of grapple with this new way of parenting and really the realistic way of parenting, which is that kids date. And you need to make sure that they're safe and they're educated and about their, you know, about consent and about feelings and about emotions and how to navigate this very confusing space.
I think a really funny example that I have with my mother was, I was once talking to my mother about generally like marrying someone because you want to. And then, you know, she sort of said that, yeah, you know, it makes a lot of sense and, you know, go ahead, look for someone. And I was a bit shocked. All your life you're told, don't date, do not have any relationship. Okay, but, and then she was like, I can't believe I just gave her the license to do whatever she wants, or like, just, you know, because I think although she agrees that she does want to give me that license, it's just awkward for them to say with their own mother, because it's not what you should as a Pakistani parent be saying. So I think they are very conflicted, where it's like, and they also have to draw this boundary about between like what generally society does and what in their eyes a parent of a Pakistani girl would do and what maybe they feel like doing at that moment.
I think they've also never really been taught how to show affection correctly or how to navigate their own lives in these regards, just because, you know, as you said, Inaya, they're trying to correct the things that their parents did not teach them, but, you know, having grown up like that has impacted their own lives in so many ways. Like, I think about how my own parents are divorced, so I'm not bringing that example here, but even with my friends, even when their parents do have stable marriages, I don't think I know a lot of people who've seen their parents like express affection in front of their kids. There's just such an inability to do so, such an inability to talk about emotions, to really share with your partner. I don't think we're taught a lot about like our duties to our husbands and maybe our husbands' duties to us, but we're never really taught about how to navigate the sort of complicated parts of relationships.
Relationships are just so complex, and it requires as much self-reflection about yourself and about your habits and your ways of handling things. My parents are divorced as well. My parents were divorced very early on, so I don't even have any memory really of my parents ever being together. And the only form of affection I've ever seen is between my grandparents. But even then, it's quite bizarre. They've actually begun to show more affection as they've got older. They've become more sentimental with each other. They hold hands. It's really cute. Going back to what Vinnie was saying about, you know, my grandmother did a bizarre thing. My grandmother's very conservative. All my mum's siblings have had marriages that were, you know, arranged and accepted by the parents before anything was to go ahead. And my grandmother was there and she was, you know, she's whispering to me, but she can't really whisper. She actually is really loud when she whispers, but she thinks she's whispering. And she was there and she was just sewing something and asked me about university and said, oh, so are there any Pakistani boys where you study? And I went, yeah, I mean, there are loads, you know. Again, I was thinking trap, escape, change subject. And I was like, yeah. She went, yeah, find yourself. She was like, listen, find yourself someone nice. And I looked at her and I didn't know how to take it because, you know, I've grown up in my life with this very conservative woman giving out opinions about all of her child spouses, you know. And I went home to my mum afterwards and I told her. And I was like, this was so funny. Let me tell you what mama said. And she was like, well, maybe mum's finally realising the realities of things nowadays. This is a certain liberalizing amongst my grandparents, my mum's parents. Yeah,
I do think that has something to do with us getting older. I think for younger teenagers, that sort of those sort of restrictions are still very much there. I think for us it's changing because we're getting to that point, but you know, it wasn't so long ago when I was 16 and this conversation was impossible. And I have younger siblings and I can see that it is going to be like that for them as they sort of reach that point when they're sort of interested in these things.
So going back to what Angbin was saying about the fact that people don't show love, it's so true. And it's actually been so puzzling for me growing up because in some places it's just not something that's common. In some places it's almost taboo. So I've had like distant relatives literally make fun of people who are showing each other love on their marriage. And it's like, why is this something that you think is not okay? This is two people getting married. What are they going to do if not show each other affection? And it's weird because it creates this really like awkwardness towards something as normal, as natural, as Anaya was mentioning in the start, as love and relationships. It's honestly, it's such an important basic part of our existence, but it's made into this really weird and sensationalized thing, I think, almost as we grow up in these societies.
I'm sure all of you at some point have heard someone comment at a wedding about how the bride is too happy. No, she needs to be more somber. She needs to calm down. What is she so happy for? It's just
where someone said, you know, oh, strange, she isn't crying. And I went, she's just happy. And they were like, yeah, but she's not. That it tells a bad sign. She's not going to be a good daughter-in-law. She doesn't value her parents enough quickly. She's not feeling. Have you guys watched, there's a British British film, Bend It Like Beckham?
Yeah, I love it. It's my favorite film of all time.
It's so funny, but do you remember the scene when the sister gets married and she's smiling? She's like, finally, I'm marrying my boyfriend. And they're walking down and the cameraman's going, now cry, look sad.
Yeah. I think it's a bit sad that even though there's a sort of shift, even like with our parents or our grandparents, there's so many parts of like our social circle that are so resistant to this. Like, I'm not going to lie, when I wanted to do this episode, my first thought was, oh god, there are going to be people who are going to be mad about this. You know, there might be bits where I have to sort of self-censor a bit about my personal life or about this issue, because I can imagine like how many people are like, why are you talking about these things? Why is the Paksok name associated with this? This is wrong, this is against our culture, etc., etc.
I mean, LSC dating, we could do a whole episode on, you know, the nature of that. But there is a certain conservatism that's still very much rife within our generation, you know? you know, even when you speak about people that you know that are much older than you, oh, well, she's just had a baby. Oh, was she married? That's normally the first or second question that comes. And then there's a general, oh, she's not. Oh, okay. And it's surprising since, you know, having a child, being married is not a prerequisite to having a child or being a mother or being a parent in any way. But it's still the sort of the standard response. And it still is sort of, I think, looked down upon if you're unmarried, but yeah, you've had a child, or, you know, if you're not married or you've decided that, you know, perhaps you're in a long-term partnership, but you haven't decided to get married. And there's the general, oh, why wouldn't you get married? Isn't that the natural way? I've had these discussions with my mother more so over the past year. I personally, you know, I don't see myself getting married. I don't think it's necessary. I feel very apathetic about it. Think to myself, oh well, if I married someone who was Muslim and it was really important for us to get married, then okay, fine, I'll accommodate. But then who are you really marrying for, right? I'm not really marrying for myself. I'm just marrying for so my grandmother doesn't, you know, feel so angry at me. I'm just marrying so my mother's life is easier when people ask, oh, is your daughter married?
Oh yeah, I agree with you absolutely. And I think all of this is what makes it so hard to navigate relationships when, you know, you're a young teenager who's trying to figure themselves out and, you know, experiencing romantic attraction for the first time. And all of these fears, all of these anxieties around your community or your family or like aunties and uncles that, you know, finding out. I mean, speaking to personal experience, I know that even if I wasn't exactly out on a date, if I was hanging out with one of my male friends in a public space, I would just constantly be stressed that I'd run into someone who knows my family, just because of how much social pressure there is at any given time. And if you were from a far stricter family than mine, then it's such a stifling experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that. I come from a town that has a large Muslim Pakistani Kashmiri community. It's very small, it's close-knit, it's sort of everyone knows everyone. So absolutely, there is this overbearing big brother presence in the form of, you know, aunties and uncles and, you know, just about everyone who may know you in any shape or form or connection. And there is the shame attached to dating and, oh God, and the reputation. And absolutely, without a doubt, we know that it disproportionately, the shame of it all lands far more heavily on the girl that's decided to engage in this inappropriate behavior, right? You see, especially your town that I'm brought up, so easily, it's so geared to brand the woman, you know, with all these pejorative reputational sort of slurs to her and her family, and then, you know, it's extended by that, and you still have that sort of being carried on, I guess, from the subcontinent when they migrated initially in the 60s, even more so because they feel like they have to portray a sense that they have, even though by staying here for so long they have resisted westernization amongst their children. They are not Western, they are still very much Pakistani and Muslim in the way they conduct themselves. And you do get this sort of witch hunt mentality, I would say, predominantly in British Asian communities that you do find in the UK. It's exceptionally toxic, and it's, you know, all it does is really engender an awful attitude that your own children will have about women and men and, you know, dating and, you know, sex and things like that. Even then, just even discussing it, that I'm sure there are a multitude of people who have experienced probably awful things because they've spiraled out of control to hide things, or they simply had to, they couldn't discuss things with their parents or their family members because of the shame that would be inflicted upon them.
Yeah, and that's so true. What you said about how this disproportionately falls on women. Every single Muslim girl I know, whether it's girls who do date, gay Muslim girls, girls who have never been in a relationship in their lives, all of us have a feeling that we lead a sort of double life where there's one side that we show to our families, and then there's another entire part of our lives that we feel we can't share with anyone outside of are very close friends, and even then there's always this fear that someone's going to rat you out. There's so much that we end up holding back because we're scared of being shamed, we're scared of having our feelings be ignored, having our feelings be belittled, having our experiences be belittled, feeling like we can't experience things just because of the shame, and because we are sort of supposed to carry the honor of our family. Like when I was really young, I was once very clearly told by my father that like the sort of reputation of our family is something I need to bear in mind as I grow older. Before I went off for university, you know, my dad was very much like, do well and please don't do anything that'll make us feel, that like bring shame to us or that'll ruin our name. And that constant pressure is so exhausting, because what happens is the implications of this pressure are that more and more women feel unsafe in these situations. You can't stop people from dating or having sex or having relationships. But when you put all of these sort of expectations and all of these pressures on them, you make it increasingly hard for them to find a way out of bad experiences. I can't honestly tell you that if I were ever assaulted, I would feel comfortable telling my parents. If I could, I would avoid telling them entirely, just because I can't bear the thought of that sort of, you know, sense of disappointment, that sense of, oh, our daughter has brought shame to us, that would accompany that. And so many girls are in relationships or like in situations that are turning abusive, situations where they're being blackmailed, situations where they've experienced violence, physical or emotional, and they can't turn to like the people they love the most. And it's just, it leaves them in a very impossible situation. And men always get to control the narrative when these things happen, because our voices are just not listened to.
I think it's also really sad because a lot of times, I mean, a lot of our parents would be really upset if they knew that once we'd been assaulted or abused, and that we haven't come to them. Because at the end of the day, in the situation that we were in any way in trouble, they would support us. But because of the fact that they have this extremely strict demeanor since we've been young, and the sort of boundaries that they've set, and the way that they've made this topic, dating, such a huge taboo, and all those conversations about it's not okay for you to date, that they've created a situation where we're in the case that we were abused or anything, we don't feel comfortable in going to them. And it's such a pity though, because I feel like in the parents' part, it's also a bit of a miscommunication. Also, the topic that Angbin touched upon about safe spaces, like a lot of times our friends are not even safe spaces, let alone our parents. In Pakistani society, it's like, how can one find a safe space? Is there even a safe space? Because yeah, your friends can rat you out. Even if your friends are being supportive, there's this fear that they might be judging you from the inside because of the general stigma that's attached.
I think, you know, if we were to talk about how men do have some struggles here, but largely, you know, for them to date or for them to have girlfriends is something that's something, it's something that you can let slide. If not, it's something that's like actively praised by their friends. It is very much tiring sometimes thinking about the unfairness of this sort of situation, thinking about how, you know, this dark side very much exists to all of these things, to all of the sort of jokes that we make about like sneaking out or hiding relationships from our parents, or, you know, like always having a backup plan in case there's a surprise phone checking that our mothers do. And these jokes are one way of coping with all of this, but it's still a shame that these issues exist and that we have such a long way to go.
I mean, just to add to that, on being personal experience that I've sort of I've noticed, you know, the British Pakistani boys that I've dated, they're very much tethered to their mothers. I'm going to say it. I've said it now. They're very much mothers. I think they have this very problematic notion of what a girlfriend is. And I really do sometimes think that they just want a mother. you know, and they do want someone that will put up with all their rubbish because their mother puts up with all their rubbish. And
the thing about this is that this isn't even a diaspora problem. This is just how it is. This is just how it is.
Right?
have you ever met a guy and you're not even their girlfriend, you're literally their friend, or is just someone that
all of them
and how they will still treat you like you're their mother?
It's, and you know what, it's put me off dating thing to the point where now I try to actively avoid dating someone that is British Asian, because I just know the sort of the line of problematic, let's be honest, sexist tropes that they're going to have. It also goes back to the thing, you know, when you date someone and you like them, but you know you can never really change them, but you still delude yourself and thinking you can change them. And I think that is something that is exceptionally true for British Asian boys, or Pakistani boys in particular. I don't think they can be changed. I do think they have this problematic way in which they view women and wives, and they certainly romanticize it a lot. And it is romanticized in Bollywood films, in Pakistani films, in songs, you know, the all round caring girlfriend that is there just to serve and sustain the guy. But I do think of the worrying notion of being with someone and then his reaction to finding out that he's not the first man I've been with. Pakistani boys, you know, they're liberal and they're cool and they're educated, and you know, their wives and their girlfriends to be career driven as well, but oh, it comes at a limit. It is sexist, of course it's sexist, and it's something they of course need to tackle amongst themselves.
Very hypocritical, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because the guys are dating, they're having like all kinds of relationships as well, and then to think that the woman can't,
or is the sense of a woman chased, she should. Of course she dates, but she, you know, fully dating.
There's a lot to be said about how a lot of women uphold a lot of these horrible patriarchal rules. And, you know, I do sympathize with them to a certain degree, because I think they too are often trapped in really impossible situations or grew up in really impossible situations. But yeah, no, I think there's a very specific sort of progressive-ish man who can understand some social justice language, who can really critically think about race and can really critically think about class to a certain extent, completely misses how misogynistic he is in his day-to-day interactions or his sort of expectations in relationships.
There's a lot of gaslighting in South Asian relationships. I've noticed that, you know, why are you overreacting about this? This isn't such a big issue, but your thing is an issue. And men, you know, whether they are British, Pakistani or Pakistanis internationals at university, they have this sort of upper, you know, this tight upper lip still about it. So much can be unpicked from that. And I think we can talk about that for days, and they can, you know, I'm sure there are research papers about it and academic papers about it, and interviews and everything.
This needs to be a whole series in itself.
But do you guys have some closing remarks? Do you guys think the young people should change so that they can differentiate themselves from the previous generations and the mistakes that we believe that the previous generation has made, and so that conversations around dating and love can be discussed more openly, and so that we can have more safe spaces?
I mean, I'll go first. There's a lot to unpick there. If I was to be really just broad, I would just say it's the same qualities that you have for being a good human being. Be considerate, be understanding, be responsible about your actions. Dating, you know, no matter what culture you come from, is messy. It's messy, it's complex, it's uncomfortable. And let alone, you know, throwing in South Asian culture and, you know, your parents into the mix, that adds a whole other dimension to it. What I will say is, it's fun sometimes to have the double life and the undercover dating life, sure, but you know, it takes a toll on everything. And you should always conduct yourself in a way that you think is respectful to yourself and to others. And I think it's respectful to your parents, sure. You have to respect their culture, you have to respect the generation they come from. But you also have to make sure you're being considerate to the person you're dating, and, you know, considerate to the way you're conducting yourself. And that means putting your feelings as well there.
I agree with everything Anaya said for sure. And I think women need to start asking for more. I think we need to start demanding more. We need to start demanding more from our parents, from the people we date, from the people we marry. We need to think about these things. And ultimately, I think we have to sort of, you know, center what we need and center our expectations, center what is important to us. We're taught from a very young age to be as self-sacrificing as you possibly can be. And I think it's done enough damage for our grandmothers and our mothers and our aunts. We need to learn to, you know, not carry this forward anymore. And I think we also need to think about building each other up. At the very least, you know, we shouldn't be shaming other women. God knows a lot of us are complicit in these things. But as we grow older, we have to recognize the importance of, you know, having each other's back, sticking up for each other in, like, society, and largely, like, more broadly speaking, a world where we're constantly being scrutinized for just wanting happiness, wanting fulfillment, wanting to feel love.
No, absolutely. I think women are so, Asian, South Asian women as well, they're so worried about being getting slotted into an image of themselves being difficult or being high maintenance. But no, you know, nothing is more important than your feelings and your emotions, and certainly love. You know, and if you're not going to put yourself first there, then, you know, it's very difficult to put yourself first anywhere.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to our discussion. This week, I sat down with Ambeen Abbas and Inaya Inam, two fellow penultimate year Pakistani students, to explore dating norms within South Asian communities. We discussed the pressures of societal stigma, parents' disapproval, and internalized shame that young people, especially women, face as they set out to explore love and relationships. The music for this episode is Lyra Marches by the Tamash Beans. This is your host Vinya Ikram signing off. To hear more from the Beaver Sound, subscribe to us on Spotify.